Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Here's a joke from my son. What did the bum say to the other bum? That's a bummer. You know, not for everyone. Look, thanks to everyone who's come to see the previews of Can I Have My Ball Back? It's been going really, really well, and I'm really pleased with how the show's turning out. It's officially on tour now from Wednesday. I'll be at the Leicester Square Theatre. A couple of tickets left. Lots of press coming to that one. It'd be lovely to sell out, but there are a few other London gigs not selling as well. So if you're going to come to London, maybe look up those other London gigs. And then this week I'll be in St Albans on Thursday, Gloucester on Friday, Chorley on Saturday, which is sold out, but you can join the waiting list, and Glasgow on Sunday. Two shows. I think the earlier show is sold out. Check with the venue, but the later show has some availability. Come along if you can. If you enjoy these podcasts and like them being free, then the great way to pay me back is to buy a ticket to a show or buy a download or a book from gofasterstripe.com. But you can just keep listening for free as well. That pays me back also. So, you know, no pressure. But I'd love to see you there. If you just know me from the podcast and don't know me as a stand-up, I'm pretty good as a stand-up. It's a good show. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's only made about seven men faint so far. So, you know, are you brave enough to take the challenge? Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy whichever podcast you're listening to now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hello, welcome to another Rich Chang's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. My guest today is Jessica Knappett. Hey, there's a few more of these to do before it's over, so why don't you come and see us live? Go to leicestersquaretheatre.com and you can book tickets for the remaining gigs, which are on Mondays in July, or go to richchang.com/gigs and you can see all the podcasts, plus all the previews I'm doing. Plus, I'm going to be doing the Edinburgh Fringe. I'm doing a show called O'Frig. I'm 50 at the Pleasance One at 7:30 every night of the Edinburgh Fringe. And I'm also doing three Edinburgh Fringe podcasts. That's right, three. And on the 4th, 11th and 18th of August. I thought those were Saturdays when I booked them, because I was going to do it in the afternoon. It's at 10 to 2 every day on the 4th, 11th and 18th. But they're Fridays, so I'm pretty screwed. So if you're in Edinburgh on a Friday, go to the New Town Theatre or book ahead. If you go to richchang.com/gigs and look in August, you can see all the details of how to book for those shows. They're selling quite well, so book ahead. Anyway, let's sit back and relax and enjoy Rich Chang's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with Jessica Knappett. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has spent this afternoon clearing up some cat wee. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Hello. Thank you very much. Hello. Welcome. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was down at the Saturday Superstore. Hanging around with Mike Reed and not that one, the other one, and the one who's still alive, the racist one, the Calypso one. He calls it Rehellastibus. I don't know if that's, it's still running, the Saturday Superstore. It was on TV, but then they didn't close it down just because it wasn't on TV anymore. It still goes there, it still does it every weekend. And it's still the same kids. They're all grown up. It's quite tragic. So I have... My cat keeps weeing. It's terrible. And my cat did a... The litter tray's in the bathroom now, which is good because that's a tiled floor. But it wees, you know, right underneath the cat litter tray, which is the worst. But I did a massive wee under the cat litter tray and it smells so bad. Have you ever smelt cat wee, Dave? It's nasty, isn't it? And there's a really ammonia smell. And then I had to spend... Well, because my wife's pregnant, so she can't touch cat wee. It's convenient, isn't it?
And so I had to spend all afternoon kind of wiping it up and then moving the litter tray around, then cleaning under. And now, even though I've had a shower and changed my clothes and everything's definitely cleaned up, all I can smell is cat wee. Can you smell cat wee, Dave? No. That's what I'm worried about. So hopefully, if you smell cat wee, that's what it is, mate. I haven't weed myself, and my wee doesn't smell of ammonia. Lots of exciting news, hasn't there been? There's been lots of exciting news, and this will take a couple of weeks to go out. So God knows how many elections there will have been, and who will be the Prime Minister by the time this goes out. It could be me. That's what I'm hoping. I think it's time to set up a new party and win at the moment. It's a very exciting time to be alive. I was going to do lots of jokes in the last 2 weeks' podcast about the Tories having a landslide and everything, the inevitability of that. So I'm glad I didn't now, because I look cool. I look clever for not doing that. I stayed up all night drinking whiskey and eating pickled onions. Anyone else? Anyway, we're going to crack straight on, I think. So my guest this week is probably best known as the floor runner on Mischief Night. Possibly night. And that's why we're all here to see it. Will you please welcome Jessica Knappett, ladies and gentlemen? Jessica Knappett. Hello, how are you doing? Lovely to see you. Sit down, pull up a microphone. There's some water there.
Can you smell cat wee?
I can smell. Oh, you'd know if you could smell it. It's such a horrible... Have you got cats?
No.
Horrible. I mean, oh. I really hate my cat, and he's stupid. My nice cat died. I got put down.
They always do.
In 2016, she was one of the victims of 2016. Lino.
I stroked my cat to death.
Did you?
Yeah, it was. Well, it was. I mean, I think it was dying anyway, but the household now believe that I stroked it to death.
Wow.
And that's why it died. And my dad is a doctor, and he stood over me while I stroked my cat as it was dying.
Yeah.
Just saying things like, the lungs are filling with fluid now. And yes, no, the breathing will stop soon. That's the heart rate lowering significantly. And then Sonic died.
Ah, Sonic.
And then my dad was concerned that we didn't have enough photographs of Sonic to remember him by. So he took several photos of the dead cat.
Was it like in Victorian times, what happened quite a lot when children died?
Really?
They couldn't afford... their photography was so expensive, they couldn't do it. So they would sort of pose... They would pose the dead, yeah, and sort of prop them up and take photos of them. If you get this, you can check it out on the internet. Perhaps not the best topic to discuss with you.
You have to Google dead babies, Victorian
dead Victorian
era.
Babies, yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, I watched
that.
Lino,
hot. I'm going to take my cardio.
It is hot out here. Sorry. My God, you're pregnant.
yeah, I'm not keeping it. You see, you've made that assumption, Richard.
Well, I worked with you quite recently, so I'm just doing the mathematics. And
do you remember how that... when we worked together. In fact, you were one of the first people that I told.
You were.
Because I was so... I'd just had a scan to confirm it.
Yeah.
And then I had to go back onto set to work with Richard on his pilot that he's written that's really good. And you were like, you were talking about your kids, and you went, "Oh, never have kids." And I said, it's too late. And then you carried on talking, and I was like, "I'm pregnant, Richard." And you were like, "Yeah, no, I got that. I was just carrying on my story. I really wanted to I'd told someone, and I really wanted to talk about it. And you kind of just sort of swept it under the carpet like it wasn't happening.
Yeah. Kids apart from mine are interesting. That's the thing. So as you'll discover when you're a parent.
Right. It'll only be your kids that'll be interested in. Yeah.
They are great. My ones are. I don't know why I told you not to have kids. Well, I've only got one so far, but I'm guess the other one I've seen a picture of. He's still inside, but in the picture he's going.
Oh. That's pretty cool.
I'll show you a picture later. It's amazing. Either that or he's about to blow his brains out. I don't know. He's either going, or he's going. So one of the two. I watched my cat Lino. I saw the life ebb out of her eyes. It's the first.
Yeah.
It's the first thing I've ever witnessed. I saw my first real human dead body last year.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And I haven't told this story. I probably won't tell it now. But basically, we went to America and... we knew, like, one of my wife's relatives was quite ill, but it turned out he was a lot more ill than... we were only there for a week, and... it was quite, it was quite an amusing story, but
the way you're describing it makes it sound like you didn't know she was in the room for a long time.
Well, no, I was, I can't tell the whole story, because no. my wife's auntie might be listening and may be upset about me. So I'm laughing out of embarrassment, Margaret. Her husband unfortunately had cancer and died. But we kind of were called like that, and we'd been having breakfast. They said, "Oh, he's died. Come to the hospital." And we came to the hospital. Me and my wife and my young child, and they were all just sort of standing around and said, "Come in, come in." And I thought, "Oh, you know, we'll go in." And we came in, and he was just lying there on the bed. So I wasn't expecting that. And so he was. It was quite unpleasant. So it was quite a surprise. That wasn't the funny bit.
But no one told you that he was.
No, we knew he was dead, but he'd been dead for like a couple of hours, so I thought he'd have been spirited away somewhere or, you know, not lying on the bed. So I wasn't expecting there to be a dead body in the room I walked into, is what I'm saying. That was the first human I saw dead.
Yeah.
At the age of, 48, so that's quite good. Well, that's good. And then a little later, someone injected my cat with something that made his bangs. Dead. It was a terrible year, wasn't it? Look into its eyes as it dies. Anyway, let's...
I think we're off to a flying start.
I really want to tell the whole story about that thing, but I've just told a little bit of it, and it's much worse than if I told the whole thing. But anyway, one day I'll write a play about it. It was fucking weird. And I was in Warsaw, Indiana, which is enough of a... in the heart of Trump territory. I had lunch with someone who was about to vote for Donald Trump.
Oh...
She was a bitch. she definitely doesn't listen to the podcast. So tell us about being the floor runner on Mischief Night.
I got really badly bullied.
Did you?
That program, yeah.
Was that
film, yeah.
So you're the runner?
I was a runner, yeah. I was really, really bad at my job. I didn't really know what I was supposed to be doing, and no one really wanted to tell me. It was like, I don't know, it was just one of those... trial by fire sort of situations.
Yeah.
And I actually ended the best bit, and it really was my favourite bit of the whole shoot, was when I got third degree burns from the sunshine, because I was very hot and I'd rolled up my jeans, and I actually got such bad sunburn that I had to go to hospital, and they were like, "That is third degree burns." And then I got to have 2 days off, and then they were all really nice to me when I came back.
Right.
But I got sort of I got marched off set at one point because I was just terrible. I mean, I was just terrible.
What does a runner have to do though? Make tea, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you're supposed to help people.
Yeah, you weren't really into that.
And I thought I was supposed to. I thought I was there for sort of morale boosting purposes. And I wasn't.
No.
And they didn't like my attitude.
How old were you at this? It was quite...
I think I was probably 19.
Okay.
And they kind of... I was one of those people who... I thought I was better already than that job.
Yeah.
And I was at peak Bellend, basically, at that point. And I was probably saying things like, "Yeah, I'm going to be a writer. I'm going to be a director." And they just hated me. I mean, it's just... I deserved it.
Yeah.
I was being a belle... They bullied me.
How did they bully you?
Well, it's quite hard to explain,
yeah.
Because it was just little things like they, you know, that everyone would pile off in the minibus without me. and I'd be left, you know, on location or whatever, and they'd be like, "Clear that up." And there was definitely no way that it was something that I could do on my own. They'd set me tasks that were impossible for me to do on my own, so they'd set me up for a fall.
Wow.
But
must have been galling when Mischief Night went on to be the hit film that we all know and love it.
I begged for that job as well. Yeah.
Did they? Have you taken now? If any of those people come to you and you know, now you're a big shot writer, star, TV star, You can now go, no, you can't be in my... That's what I want to do. I want to get successful. I can get Keith Allen to come to a casting for a really good part, and then I'm going to go, yeah, you were really good. But because of Edinburgh 1987, you are not going to get the part.
What did he do to you?
He just sabotaged our show and punched the theatre manager, and then when we and called our show shit, even though we didn't watch it, he was right. And then I went on TV the next week to defend myself, and then he just bullied me again. Except on national TV, until I nearly cried. So, as a little 20-year-old, were you hanging out? No, you were probably on drugs or something. I was doing that to him. He's going, whoa. So since then, I'm going
to
get him back.
You've never been able to get your own back?
No, I saw him on Charing Cross Road the other day, and he kind of looked at me. I think he knows. I think he knows a storm is coming.
Oh.
But I have to get really successful and write something amazing that he really wants to do, and then, no, you can't have it. You'll go, oh, it's all right, I've done okay.
It's a slow revenge, isn't it?
Is the best revenge is best served by failing to do the thing you were trying to do, and then Keith Allen dying of natural causes. And then just having to take that as going, that's as long as I have living. You are from Bingley in Yorkshire.
Yeah.
Which is famous, of course.
For
what do you think? What do you think is famous for?
The murderer. Is it famous for the murderer,
it is.
Richard?
Well, that is one of the things. It's interesting. I would have said for the Bradford and Bingley Building Society.
The Bradford and Bingley Building Society is not there anymore.
You know. It's a sad thing.
It is a sad thing. Well, the Bradford and Bing... I mean...
And the Yorkshire Ripper isn't there anymore, is he? But, you know, he is.
The two... both of the good things about Bingley are not there anymore. Well, the Bradford and Bingley... Yorkshire... Yeah, the Building Society, it's very, very sad because all of the buildings sort of point towards it. But like the whole, it's like the whole town was sort of built around the Building Society, the glorious Building Society, where everyone worked.
Yeah,
and now it's just an empty. Sainsbury's bought it, but couldn't be arsed to build a supermarket in there. So now it's just an empty building that everyone knows has been sort of teasingly bought by Sainsbury's, and there's nothing to it. Oh, and nobody has any jobs.
So both things are quite bad. What is the tallest building in Bingley?
Well, I would have said the Bradford and
Bingley. Yeah, it sounds like
Bradford
it might
be. Bingley Building Society. It's not in Bingley, the Shipley Clock Tower.
I couldn't find this out, so I was hoping you would know. I'm asked, this is my new question, I'm asking everyone about their hometown to see if they really are from where they said they were from.
No, I think...
Seems like she is, though, right? For all the Yorkshire Ripper
knowledge.
I would
not make it up.
There was quite a lot of other murders as well in Bingley, which is surprising for a little place. I can't remember. There was a guy who was 4'7", who was quite a local character, who was murdered. I remember, and there was someone started a killing spree in Bingley, someone else. But, you know, he's been overshadowed by the Yorkshire Ripper. You have to really go, if you're going from Bingley, you have to really go some to become the most famous murderer from Bingley.
Yeah, don't pick a fight with someone from Bingley.
That's what it's true.
It's in our blood. Yeah, no, I think someone was chucked down the stairs in a nightclub once, and it's like, horrible.
There's some nice things about Bingley.
It's a horrible place.
So I'm from you're from the West Riding of Yorkshire.
Yep.
And I'm from the East Riding of Yorkshire, so we are natural enemies.
Are we?
Yes. that famous East versus
Don't
West
bring
Riding
your
of Yorkshire.
East Riding attitude over here.
I'm
Erin.
From Pocklington, and no one was ever murdered there.
What do you call people from Pocklington?
They're cool. They're cool.
Legends.
Not serial killers.
I bet you've got some serial killers in the East Riding. I don't think the Yorkshire Ripper just kept to the West Riding anyway.
No, he didn't. He spread it around. That's why I'm annoyed with him. If he'd only killed people in Bingley, who would have cared?
Hey, you leave Bingley alone.
I'm sorry.
No, I don't.
Bingley's like such a funny name for a place. I talked about Bing last week, and that's why it's named after someone called Bingley. That's the medieval...
Lord Bing?
No, there was the bit, it means Bing's Crossing or something. It means something like that.
Oh,
but
right.
Bing is like a children's BBC character. So I imagine like Bing lives in Bingley and it's a nice... Bradford and Bingley. You know, Bradford and Bingley. That's what you remember that? And hey, remember that? Remember Bradford and Bingley? Hello, Mr. Bradford. Hello, Mr.
Hello,
Bingley.
Mr. Bingley, yeah.
Yeah, remember that? Yeah, Peter yeah. Kay. By Peter Kay career. Remember it? Yep. Good, wasn't it? Remember... Do you remember the Yorkshire Ripper? Not so good. That's why Peter Kay knows where to draw. He remembers. I don't have any filter on the things I remember. It's just, hello, Mr. Bradford. Everyone, oh, man, the Yorkshire Ripper, remember, with his little knee pads on? His customised cardigan. That's why, that's why I'm not as successful as... that's the only reason. Let's move on. So, you, of course, with Drifters is slightly based on your actual student days. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
So you did lots of, you drifted around and did lots of these jobs, the promotional jobs that...
Yeah, sort of, yeah, student and a bit afterwards, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of just based on, yeah, that period of failure in my life. Kind of,
but that everyone sort of goes through.
Yeah,
it's promotional. You know, I remember me and my students for one day only. We went to I can't remember if we asked them or they asked us, but there was a costume shop in Oxford, and they said, "Will you go and hand out some leaflets?" And we had to choose a costume to dress up. So, if anyone in 1989 saw the Mad Hatter and a gorilla walking around Oxford handing out leaflets, that was me and Stuart Lee. But you did similar sort of things.
Yeah. I mean, it was surprisingly lucrative because all you had to do was put on a stupid costume, which I didn't really mind doing. Apart from there was the darkest tale from my promotional days was when it's going to end up like your dying man story. What happened was. I was working for a betting company, like it was, you know, like gambling. I was promoting gambling, and I had a T-shirt that said "Stop and play with me" on it. And guess what? And basically, we were all outside Aintree, and it was. Just, you know, and everyone was rolling out drunk, just these, like, lashed, like, with bright red faces and bald heads, and then just this girl standing in front of them saying, "Stop and play with me." And my boss had said to me was, "Don't lose any bits of your costume because you will be charged." And I had a cap and, like, you know, a bat, a satchel or whatever, and these guys just started stripping me. off my clothes,
right.
And they didn't get as far as the T-shirt, but they got my cap, and they ran off with it. And I was running after them, "Give me my cap back!" Thinking it's £10 that cap, and I got the police involved.
Right.
And I came back and I was weeping, and I said to the woman, "Those guys just stole my cap, but I've got it back now." And it was really awful. And she was like, "Right, okay, do you want to work tomorrow, 10 till 5? And I was like, "Yeah, absolutely, definitely, because it's 100 quid.
Yeah.
So it was sort of desperate times, but you just do what you got to do for money, don't you, really?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You just dress up in whatever you're told to dress. I did draw the line at, there was one time where they phoned me up and they were like, "It's a really well-paid job. This, Jess, it's going to be sort of £200-250 per day." I was like, "Get in." And then she said what the costume was. She said, "Right, yeah, it's, well, you won't really need to bring much, just sort of your underwear, really. And then we've got sort of, it's a bunny rabbit ears on your head and just a bunny rabbit tail. And that's sort of it, really." I was like, "Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to dress as a Playboy bunny for £200. No one wants to see that." But that's the sort of, you know, yeah. I did have a I did have boundaries.
That's good to know. I read you were like selling coffee machines and taking the milk home with you.
Yeah, that was the thing that I did. I promoted a coffee machine. I can't remember what it was called now. Like an espresso, like one of those things with the capsules in it, in John Lewis. And I actually burnt a child. And that resulted in my being fired.
I think once you burn a child.
Well, they asked for it. They actually did ask for it. I mean, they literally asked for it. They asked for a hot chocolate, which could be provided by the machine, and I was happy to demonstrate. Then the mother went off, and then when she came back, I handed the hot chocolate to the child. Of course, children have very sensitive hands, don't they? And the child dropped the hot chocolate, and it went all over them, and then they were burnt. But, you know, it was my fault.
Yeah.
And...
Are they all right now, or are they
everything was fine, but because, you know, they handled it by getting rid of me. And then the other advantage of that coffee machine was that it came with little milk sachets that I could take home and put on my cereal. You know, when you're sort of just living off the dregs of your overdraft, and you're eating out of, you know, cans and
I mean, I did, but it's very hard to leave that behind. I've talked about this before. There are people like who are very rich and successful who will take empty, even if you're in a dressing room now, and there's, you know, handkerchief, like the tissues and sweets, and they just emptied the lot into their bags.
I think I am one of those.
You're still one of those, I understand it, because you start, you know, you just all start off...
You don't know when it's going to go.
You don't know where it's going to go, and you start off needing to do that. I used to steal everything I could steal from everywhere, because I had nothing.
But are you like an ashtray thief?
I didn't have a smoke, so I didn't really take ashtrays. But I would take, like, when we went to early parties at BBC like Entertainment, I would there was, you know, bottles of wine there for everyone. I would put a bottle of wine up my sleeve and walk away with it. I pretty much did that at every party I went to.
Yeah, I've been caught clanking out of parties before.
And I've still got loads of stationery from the BBC like Entertainment department. I've still got loads of really old files from about 1965 that I stole that were empty and still used as files.
I've got a lot of pencils and pens from studios across Soho.
It's good. So, you know, because you never know.
Well, you never know when your luck's going to run out.
Yeah.
So you got to keep stealing the pencils.
And also free stuff, innit? So, you know, that's... But it's not nice when you have to, you know, when you have to do it, it's more excusable. You had to choose between a sandwich or tampons as well.
I thought this was going to be one of your emergency questions.
It might become one of my new ones. I'm definitely going to ask Adam Buxton it. I'll make a note so I don't forget.
Yeah, I did. That was a...
And what I want to know is, I'm not sure which you chose. So if I was going to choose, I would choose a sandwich, because you can use that as a tampon as well. But you cannot use a tampon as a sandwich.
You have not had a period, Richard, have you? I think this is one of those questions that comes up a lot, actually, because I said it somewhere and people keep asking me about it. And I think my answer changes every time, because I now can't remember what the real answer is. But I think pretty sure I did choose the sandwich, and because it was cheaper.
Right.
And I just sort of held on. Sorry. You brought it up.
I did. I'm sorry. It's entirely my fault. Anyway, I'll ask you a couple of proper emergency questions from the new emergency question book, available from gofasterstripe.com.
Wee.
If you want to get a first edition, you have to be quick. They're selling very fast, and we might do a reprint. That's how well it's going. These people are crazy. Where? Question 85. Where do you stand on transubstantiation?
Transubstantiation.
Yes, which is, as you know, is the belief that Jesus' body and blood. When you have the bread and wine in a Catholic church, the Catholics believe it literally becomes Jesus' body and blood in their mouth.
Whereas the Protestants
just think it's a metaphor for vampirism.
My stance on transubstantiation, yeah, Richard, is a Protestant stance.
Is it?
I went to a Methodist school.
Did you?
Yeah. So it's all very metaphorical for me. And
why do you think Jesus didn't just clarify what he meant? Because he must have known what was going to happen, because he's God and can see the future. So he knew this was going to be a big issue, and he just went, yeah, you decide. And a little grin on his face. That'll create a few little wars and murders and divisions.
It's weird, isn't it? It's almost as if he doesn't really exist, because if he did exist, we'd know.
He did. Well, some people don't think he did exist, but I think he did. Question 333. What is the worst Adam Sandler film, in your opinion? Do you watch the work of Adam Sandler? I mean, you want to be careful, because you might end up working with him. So, you know, and he might listen to this podcast. I've given up on working on that with Adam Sandler.
I'm just going to say any Adam Sandler film that pops into my head.
Yeah.
Is it an Adam Sandler film? The Water Boy.
Yes, it is. That's quite, to be fair, that's quite a good one.
That's why I can
compared
remember
compared to
it.
The fucking shit that was to come. I've been watching quite a few of them, and I can't even remember what they were. I had a weekend off for the first time for a long time. I was very tired, and I watched 3 Adam Sandler films on Netflix. And I can't even remember what they were now.
Do you hate Adam Sandler?
I do, yeah.
Why would you do that?
Because I find it absolutely fascinating.
Do you like?
I think he's very interesting. In that, I think he's quite talented, but the choices he's made are very. It's all about the money, I think, and they're not very good artistic choices, and they're not even very good as just knockabout. I don't mind knockabout, rubbish, stupid, bawdy films, but they're not even very good as
how those. Do you know that he's not making sort of low budget independent student films?
Because I search out every single thing he does. They're all on Netflix, and he isn't, apart from Punch Drunk Love. That's the only thing he did that had any worth.
I can't believe you'd watch 3 films by someone you hate.
I can't remember. The one was called Sandy Wexler. Anyone seen that one? I don't think there's much crossover between me and... You should watch more Adam Sandler films. You've got to watch The Cobbler is the one you've got to watch. That's what you've got to start with. I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry, and The Cobbler are my 2 suggestions for very poor Adam Sandler films. There was quite a good one called The Longest Yard. Anyone seen that one? Yeah. That was actually quite good. So, you know, I take it back. Have you ever been brainwashed?
Oh, that's such a good question.
Thank you.
Maybe.
Yeah, you wouldn't know.
I don't know, do I?
Well, you would know if you've been brainwashed and then, you know, you had been unbrainwashed. But do we know? Who's
trying to think if I've even come close.
Did you ever have those people saying, we'll do a personality test on you? I'm not saying they're brainwashers, that particular cult of maniacs. And then they say, come into this room.
I'm too scared to go into that room.
Yeah, no, me too.
I think I could be very easily brainwashed.
When we were just first came to London about 1991, so about 24, we went to the Raelian Society, something like that, which was they believed that God was an alien, and they had this. There was a guy in France called Rael.
Someone just whooped.
Any Raelians in? And they had an open meeting, so it was basically a cult. They had an open meeting. It was a lot of bald middle-aged men and a few teenage girls.
Aliens?
They didn't. Well, they might have been. And they talked. They had us. We asked some questions and, you know, took the piss a little bit and sniggered. And then there came a point where they said, "Now you have to leave." And then something else was going to happen involving the middle-aged men and the young women. So, you know, I went back the next week, and so it was very odd. I don't know if they've been proven correct or not yet with the right. Is it the right aliens? Have I got that right? Anyone know? Usually my lunatic fans. Someone cheered. Aurelians.
Aurelians.
Yeah.
Aurelians.
Yeah, it's very different. Mine was the re-aliens. The real aliens. That's what it was. That's how we went. Let's ask some more questions about Jessica Nappet.
Okay.
That's a crazy name. Do lots of people call you Jessica Rabbit, first of all?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I had this at school.
Yeah.
I was called Rabbit, and I was telling a friend... Oh, you know, he was like, have you got any nicknames? And I said, yeah, Rabbit. And he went, I was like, because you've got big teeth and big ears. No, it's because my name sounds like Jessica Rabbit, isn't it? But yes, yeah. now I see the error of my ways. It works on two levels.
It does. No, I don't think that's fair.
it does, no.
No, it doesn't. You sort of came to comedy via a sketch group at university.
Yeah.
Is that a Lady Garden?
Yeah.
Which was six.
Six whole
women in one sketch group.
Trying
that's
to fit
like
in
12,
one.
That's 12 usual sketch groups worth of women.
I don't know. It was a disaster. Yeah. Well, it's like, we couldn't even fit in a car. It was absolute nonsense. What a terrible idea. No, it was great. I kind of loved it. And then they just got to a point where one of us had to go, and it was me.
Well, there's been a lot of you've got on to be successful. Is everyone working in the business still, or is there...
No, one of them's a teacher now. Right. Okay. She's the happiest one.
Right.
But we're all still... Yeah, three of them are in a sketch group called Birthday Girls.
Yeah, yeah.
They're still going live, and I'm doing this.
Yes.
And Ellen is here somewhere, my best friend.
Yes.
She's also doing... writing and things. Yeah, everyone's doing their own thing.
And so did you go to Edinburgh with that, or was that the route?
Yeah, we did three Edinburghs. Yeah, we sort of started at uni, and then we just, I mean, I didn't really know what was going on. I didn't know what Edinburgh was. I just sort of went along with it.
Right.
And then by the end of the summer, we had an agent and this deal from the BBC. I was like, well, I'm made now. And then that's when I obviously really started doing the promotional work. Once you decide to become an actor, that's really when you get your proper part-time work coming in from other sources.
But it's quite difficult to get discovered in Edinburgh now. This would have been, what, mid-2000s or somewhere around
2009.
2009, yeah. Late 2000s. So it's very difficult to, you know, there's so much. When I first went to Edinburgh, and in fact, we talked to Paul Merton, who was on last week. When he first went to Edinburgh, I think there were two comedy shows. So, because in his autobiography, he talks about how there were three comedians. It can't be quite true, but doing two comedy shows, and he didn't get invited on the radio show. Someone said, oh, you'll get on Pick of the Fringe because there's only six comedians. And he didn't get on, and someone on Radio 4 said, you don't have a Radio 4 voice to him, is what they said. So not that he's harboured that as a grudge and made that his... But I mean, fuck that guy. I mean, fuck that guy who said that to Pullman, who was, as it turned out, quite wrong. But literally, like, two... And when I went up, there was maybe 30 comedy shows. And so, like, everybody got seen, and there was a good chance if you did something quite interesting that something might happen with it.
Yeah.
But, like, by the time you went up... So to get an agent... To get agents and interest in TV straight away.
Well, I think we were... I mean, obviously, I had my contacts from being floor runner on Mischief Night.
Yeah.
No, we were, like... I suppose it was kind of rare for there to be six women in a sketch group. No one had really seen that before.
Yes.
We didn't realise quite how unusual it was for women to be doing comedy until we got there. So people were quite excited about that, I think.
Yeah.
And then we were actually all right.
Yes, and it's a good... I think Lady Garden's a very good name for a sketch group of women. It'd be a terrible one for a load of men. That would be a different sketch group. Sketch group of little blokes who've buried women in a garden. That's a very different one. It's a different type of sketch.
That's a Bingley garden.
It is. That's a...
one. Yeah.
Might have been all that the Yorkshire was aiming for, and he did just took the wrong course. But no, it's good. That's amazing. And then from that, was the in-betweeners movie the big break, or was there anything in between that?
Yeah. Well, there was a bit of stuff, but not really.
So how did you get into the in-betweeners movie with Joe Thomas from last week?
I just auditioned for it.
Okay.
That's what happens. They just make you audition for things, and then hopefully you get it. I don't know. It was one of those things where they didn't really know what they wanted, and they sort of said, "We don't really know what we want you to do." And then I looked at the script, and it was like, "Well, not talk clearly, because there aren't any lines here." So. And then, I don't know, I went in, I remember sort of flattering the producers because they'd just won a comedy award.
Yes.
Said, congratulations on your comedy award. And they were like, thank you. Thank you so much. And then I knew I was in.
I think it's a good... I've sat on both sides of the audition table and just definitely when you go in, say to the writer, this is really good.
I know. Why
like
does
all
no
the
one
stuff
do that?
You've done. And the writer will go, and you'll get the part. That's my advice.
Did I do that with you?
I don't think you did. You auditioned on tape. You wouldn't even come into the same room as us.
I was on my honeymoon.
I know, that's fair enough.
Fair.
Well, I think you should have got the script, said, this is over, I've got to go to England, do this 10-minute taster of something that may never
Herring
get made.
Herring has summoned me. Yeah, it was a shit honeymoon anyway, to be honest. My husband is here, he will agree.
Is it true that your husband is a professional air guitarist? Is that really true?
Yes. I mean, he does do other things.
I don't... I'm trying to become a professional self-playing snookerist. I thought I was an idiot, but that is...
Honestly, if you can find enough people who will join in. I mean, yeah, he's made a life out of air guitar. I'm not joking. Okay. He's written a book about it.
Okay.
He hosts the World Air Guitar Championship.
Does he hold a tennis racket when he's air guitaring, or is it a completely invisible air guitar that he uses?
It's completely invisible.
Okay, good. I was just checking because I wouldn't want, if you'd married someone who had a tennis racket doing that, I'd have said, come on, you've got it. That's a sad
come
case.
On, that's
you
silly.
Got it. That's...
This is silly now.
Yeah,
it's true. I know. It's ridiculous, isn't it? It's absolutely ridiculous.
It's glorious.
Yeah. It's really fun. I've been to the World Air Guitar Championships.
Yeah, I hope so.
And, yeah, I've watched...
That's why I heard you were hanging around there every year hoping to bag yourself a famous air guitarist and finally one bit.
Well,
one who liked rabbity-looking women.
I'll have you know, actually, Richard, that it's quite competitive to become what is known as an air mattress.
Okay.
But to marry one.
Those guys usually don't settle down. They don't need to settle down. It's very nice. You wrote a lovely article about it in The Guardian about that.
Yeah.
About falling in love. And
yeah. Yeah, yeah, because he turned up on my doorstep. That really was true.
Yeah.
It was it's like a rom-com. I was rent. Shall I tell the story?
Yeah. Go.
Yeah.
Come on, it's nice.
I was renting a flat from a mutual friend and we had a spare room and he sent me this email saying, you know, my friend Dan's coming to London. Is it all right if he stays in the spare room? And I just thought, this guy's going to be a bellend. I don't want anyone staying in my flat. It's going to be weird. And then he turned up and, you know, he was hot. And he didn't have to stay in the spare room, as it happened. Not for long. But it was kind of, I was really, became quite, very, very quickly quite obsessed with him.
Yeah.
And I actually constructed situations for us to hang out in that seemed casual. So I sort of hurriedly put together nights out so that I could invite him along.
No.
But he did, I mean, but then he also invited me out for dinner. We ended up having dinner with a producer friend of mine and Harry Enfield. And I was like, this is a weird date. But, yeah. Anyway.
You've always got to bring Harry Enfield along to an early date, just so Harry can tell.
This is the Cupid, yeah.
And if it's not going well, he can just do some of his characters and stuff.
Only me, is that...
Did you, once you, he wasn't sleeping in the spare room anymore, did you try and sublet the spare room again to someone else? And then what if you had, and then you liked the other guy more? There's a sitcom for you. Just the key form coming in.
God, yeah, that's a yeah. I should have really thought about. I mean, I wasn't really. Yeah, I wasn't really maximising the potential of that spare room.
I'd have been worried about the spare room all the time.
No, then the slight problem was that he lived in Los Angeles.
Yes.
So I thought, well, this is never going to happen. And then he said, come to Los Angeles. And then I actually did, and then I didn't leave. So I thought I'd just go for a few days, and then I stayed for 3 weeks.
Oh.
And then I married the guy.
That's nice.
Turn up on our doorstep, I will marry you. That's how it goes.
And not only married, you definitely had sex at least once.
We have had intercourse.
Yeah. I spotted it. That's my favourite. Kevin Eldon's stand-up. The actor Kevin Eldon, when he did stand-up, he did a joke about whenever he sees a pregnant woman, he did playing a nerdy character or something, as you would. I think it was Norm from the Twix adverts. He goes, ah, ha, ha, you've had sex every time he sees a pregnant woman. It's my favourite Kevin Eldon joke of many. I've heard your husband, who was doing the reading. Was it your husband doing when you sent your audition tape in? Was he playing the other parts on the audition tape?
Yeah.
Because there was a line that I nearly wanted to cast him as. We got Noel Fielding to play this genie character, but I wanted your husband because he. Oh, it's about David Koresh. He didn't. I know he's an American. He clearly didn't know who David Koresh was.
I know, it was really annoying me too. He kept going, because the line was, all right, David Koresh.
Yeah.
And he kept going, all right, David Koresh.
Yeah. Like he was some software on a phone reading that. So are you sure it's real?
Can't perform with this.
All right, David. Honestly, that was my favourite bit of the audition. That's why you got the part. I was just hoping I'd meet him and get him to say that a few more times.
Poor Dan, he's here.
Good, well, I'll meet him later. I'll get him to say it.
I don't know where.
Well, we'll talk briefly about there's no real proper news on this sitcom yet. This was, I wrote about alternate universes. The irony is there's a universe where it's being made right now.
Hey.
But it might get made. I've got to write. I had a meeting the day after the election. With the new head of comedy at Channel 4, who's making the decision. And I've been up all night drinking whiskey and eating pickled onions, as you know. Which isn't the best way to go into a meeting. Then you have to then explain to people where this idea will go.
Where the smell is coming from.
Where the smell. They go, is that cat? We said, not yet, that's next week. And then that's just my natural aroma.
Somewhere there's a universe where this room doesn't smell of whiskey and pickled onions.
Yeah. And so I had to explain it all, and then they went, yeah, we don't really understand it. Can you write another script? So we'll find out eventually whether... Because, you know...
I don't think writing another script's going to clear it up.
I think it is. but we'll see. So it might still... I hope it will happen. I think it's good.
It's brilliant.
You're one of the rare people who've seen it, because you were in it.
It's incredible. And it's it's sort of an adventure comedy. It's kind of romantic. It's funny, and it's there's a little bit of horror in
there is.
And it's got a dinosaur in it.
Yes, and you get the people on the internet who we were discussing backstage will like that bit, because there's a bit where a dinosaur basically dribbles all over your face, so you can you can cut out the dinosaur bits.
That's a lovely thought, Richard. No one was thinking that when they were flicking gelatin at my face when we were filming it, were they?
I wasn't there that day, that's why I'm glad they filmed. I said, can you make sure you film that bit? And we'll have to stick it in somehow. We'll write something to make that scene make sense.
Yeah, I noticed that you didn't turn up on the day that we were shooting outside in the freezing cold.
Yeah.
You were very sort of hands off that day.
I was.
You were like, I'm just going to leave you guys to it because I trust you. And I don't want to get cold.
I'd got ill. I was ill that weekend.
Oh, right.
I was ill. I was in the first... There's 2 days of filming, this 10-minute thing, and I was playing a man in a background who complains about lamb's feet.
Yes, you were very good.
Thank you. They cut one of my two lines out of the taste of tape when I wasn't there, and I explained to them the second one doesn't work unless you do the first one. But they don't care. And then I had some... Well, you'll find out with this thing, when it comes out, they just give you diseases all the time. I was ill for like the next 6 weeks. I was really badly ill, and I had to go on tour. It's awful. You can't stop.
Oh, I hope I die.
That's why I hope I die before my second child is born, because I can't
you just
go
can't
through
be
all
asked
again.
With that
I can't go
level
through all
of
again.
Flu.
Not sleeping. Oh. You're ill.
Yeah.
They, you know, they. I mean, they shit. I think cats are bad. They shit. They shit. These babies shit. Just they shit themselves. They're not even ashamed. And I think the boy ones just wee in your face. They like them wee in your face.
I'm not having a boy
one.
Well,
you're lucky.
I'm having a woman.
You're having a woman?
Yeah.
Fully grown.
Yeah.
Benjamina
so.
Button. They're not. It's not. It's a wonderful journey you're going on of not sleeping and.
I can't even think about it because, I mean, you don't even really think about motherhood because you've got to think about all the, you know, the horror of pregnancy, really, and giving birth. And, you know, you just don't even, your brain can't even get into that
yeah.
yet. I mean, I probably should try and think about it at some point because it is going to happen.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I keep worrying about little things like how will I know my waters have broken and it's not just sweat. Things like that.
Yeah, I mean the waters breaking is a massive part of it. I think they make a big thing, and in dramas they make a big thing of the waters breaking, but it's not like a big deal. I don't think it doesn't always exactly happen. I don't think.
I don't want to get advice about this from you.
Yeah, I've been through it. I can tell you all about it. Don't have the gas and air. Make sure you have something stronger than that.
What? Yeah.
There's a thing, there's a pipe in the wall. I was saying backstage, but I never take drugs. I've hardly ever taken drugs. And the only good thing about the two or three hours I'm sitting around waiting for things to kick off. My wife got proper drugs and was having a lovely time.
Oh, good. Well, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. And then I was just sucking this stuff out of the wall. It's in the wall. Like, but, and I thought, you know, I don't take drugs, this is really going to hit me. And it literally did nothing. It did not put me in the mood to pass a bowling ball out of my anus. I'm telling you that right now.
This is it. People keep saying to me, you know, it's all very natural and, you know, it's natural for that size thing to be down there. And I just keep thinking, if that was true,
yeah.
Then why didn't they make dicks bigger? Or vaginas.
Yeah, I think that might be the way around. It's horrific. I won't dwell on it. I'll give you a copy of Happy Now where I describe. Actually, that in Happy Now, she's dead. That fucking lino. Because on the day my daughter was born, I went downstairs to get a glass of water for my wife, and that cat had done a shit outside the litter tray, and in the dark I'd missed it, and I stepped in cat shit. And then I dragged it back up to the bed. I went back to bed when my wife was in the bath. I thought, you know, can't do anything, can I? So I thought I'd get some sleep so I'd be ready for the birth. And then I rolled around in cat shit. And then I was covered in shit. And then that's the abiding memory of the birth of my daughter, is the smell of cat shit, which I couldn't get out of my nostrils. So buy Happy Now from GoFastStripe.com. Find that story. So that probably won't happen to you.
No, well, I don't have a cat, as we know.
That's quite a specific thing, but the rest of it was bad as well. It was awful, the whole thing's awful.
God, shut up.
It's the least natural thing I've ever seen.
I'm just gonna take all the drugs.
Yeah, have the drugs.
And then if it doesn't come out,
yeah,
then I'll have it cut out.
Oh.
What? We've got to talk about it.
It's an option.
No, it'll be fine. I won't remember it. No one remembers it, do they?
Well, I think my wife does.
Oh, fuck.
She remembers the 2 hours before she got the epidural. So I can...
I don't know. Let's not think about it.
Let's not think about it. It probably won't happen. There's no point in worrying about something that hasn't happened yet, right? Don't waste your time.
Cheer up, love. That was the equivalent of cheer up, love. It might never happen.
Yeah. It might just be a really big fart. That'd be embarrassing if you got there and that's all it was.
It could be a hysterical pregnancy. That's the thing. Catherine of Aragon had loads of those.
I know. Okay. Funny, not that funny, you'd think, for an hysterical pregnancy. It's a misnamed thing.
I don't hear anyone laughing, Catherine.
That might be what this is. I'm waiting for this to come out. My daughter was understands as a baby and my wife, and she was saying, then we were talking to them, and she said, yes, I saw. She looks through, she thinks she can see him through my wife's belly button.
Idiot.
Yeah, she's a fool. She's a fool.
How old is she?
28 years old, that's the thing. 28. She's 28 years old. And, you know, she should be if I was a normal person. But she's two and a bit. She's so,
still stupid.
She loves her mum. She loves... your daughter will love you. I think there's a point where it turns... I'm hoping there's a point where it changes over and I will get some love. If I kiss my daughter, she says, yuck. It's like being, like dating again. She completely sees through me.
Oh, yeah. How did you deal with it the first time round?
I had to go over there. Now I have to stay with this one. I'm not allowed to leave. I think she's got quite a good sense of humour. I think I'm training her up to be a comedian. But I think she's going to be funny. Today she was putting the jigsaw pieces in the wrong place on purpose and then laughing.
Ah,
that's quite subtle
humour. Sneaky little bitch.
I go, that's wrong. And she goes, no, it goes there. Clever joke. She kind of like. She sometimes forgets she doesn't like me, and has a nice time with it when she's thinking about it. She remembers she doesn't. It's a terrible thing. You trained as a masseuse.
Oh my god!
I don't understand what you meant to get out of being a masseuse. I don't understand what the relationship is.
No,
I don't understand the pleasure of it.
Really?
Yeah, because
go for massages.
I do, but I don't. I find them uncomfortable and weird, and then you know. I'd prefer if they wank me off at the end. And that is never part of it. If they're going to touch me...
Well, not never, Richard.
How many people, when you're a masseuse, there's the unspoken expectation of the end of the arrangement?
Well, this is... I mean, I trained as a masseuse before I realised how dangerous it was to be a masseuse. Right. And then once I qualified, and by the way, this is massively exaggerated because all I did was I did a diploma in Indian head massage.
Right, okay.
I've got a diploma
That's the kind of massage that I'd be definitely going in there. And what's going on?
Yes. Yeah. I know. And I actually did it because I graduated university with an English and drama degree and then thought I can't use this for anything in the short term. This is not going to get me a job, so I did a weekend course in Indian head massage, and then all I did was I sort of looked into where I might be able to practice, and it was like, you know, just in people's homes.
Right.
So what you can do is just go into people's houses who you don't know and offer them a massage and ask them for some money and hope they don't kill you in Bingley. So I quit.
Yeah.
No, I did. Yeah. You know, I can.
What is the
do
pleasure
it.
Of them? I don't like. I don't what? Like. I don't. I think it's weird being massaged and just like thinking, why are they doing it?
No, it's
leave me alone. Get off me.
Well, yeah.
Get off
you
me.
Need to let go. You need to just.
I'm very tense.
Is it that you worried about getting a boner?
No, not. I mean, partly, but not really. I just don't understand what's the pleasure meant to be. I'm not worried. It'd be nice to get one at my age.
You've got a... I mean, do you not... I mean, that says to me that you don't understand the pleasure of touch at all.
I don't like being touched by people I'm in love with. I don't want to be touched by some stranger.
Oh, right. So you've got to pretend that you're in love with them first. Yeah, you're going to be a complex.
By the end, I usually am in love with them, and then they walk out and go, "Oi!"
So that's what this is about.
That is just rude.
He just pointed at his penis, everybody. Who's not here? I'm just listening.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't really know what to tell you.
Okay.
I think you need to just chill out.
I just find it. It makes me feel awkward. I just feel. I feel embarrassed for the first time. I'm also there having to touch my raddled body. I feel a little awkward for them. They don't can't be enjoying that.
They don't care.
They must care somewhere. They must,
as long as, I mean, the thing is, as long as you're not going to hurt them, I don't think they care. But I do. I know what you mean, because I do sometimes, when I go for a massage, I do think, I do lie there sometimes thinking, because they put things over your eyes sometimes and dim the lights and lock the door. And you think, you could just kill me now.
Yeah. Once I went for a massage in a Tel Spa, and it was a hot and cold stone massage. It was a man, middle-aged man, gave it to me, and he said, "He said I get to take my pants off," and he didn't give me any little paper pants or anything. He said, "Just the towel's fine," and he did get me quite relaxed. But then he touched my penis twice during the massage.
On purpose, or did it just sort of brush?
Well, I mean,
past?
it's you know, it's so big, it could have been an accident. That's the thing. You might think I'm not expecting it to be.
That's the thing.
I wasn't expecting it to be down there, but I think you wouldn't do it twice. There'd be the second to be once.
The second time wasn't a mistake. No way.
No way.
I mean, I think women probably have to go through these things slightly more than men, so they get they're more accustomed. You know, because women have things like waxes and stuff like that. Actually, I this has happened to me twice now, where I've had a bikini wax. Oh, well, once was when I was having a bikini wax, and the girl who was giving me the wax went, "Do I know you?" Like, well, maybe. Can we talk about it afterwards? And then this happened to me last week. I was having a mole checked down there. And the doctor said to me, "Were you on 8 out of 10 cats last week?" Not now. And then he made me feel really uncomfortable because he said, he went, "You've got to be funny to be on 8 out of 10 cats." And I was like, "Just get on with the check." And he was, and I was like, "Yeah, yeah." And he went, "No pressure." I was like, "Oh no, sorry, I'm not going to do material now. So I'm not very funny when we're talking about skin cancer, mate." But
it'd be good if he got, you know, you got him laughing, and then he said, "Yeah, it is." Let's hope that isn't what happened. So it's. Oh dear!
Why am I talking about that?
I'll ask you some rude. I can't find this one, but if you're in a human centipede and you're in the middle, and you can choose the people at either end of you, you're the middle one in the human centipede. Who would you have in front and behind you?
Oh!
I don't ask everyone this, Jessica. No. This is, you're a very special person to get this.
Oh, do I have to?
No, you don't have to do anything.
So with a human centipede,
I'm very happy to discuss what it is with you.
Is someone I haven't seen it?
No, I haven't seen it either. Sounds disgusting.
So
so the first in the front has their bum sewed to your mouth, and have your bum sewed to the mouth of someone behind you. Is it a way? It's just asking, who would you like to eat the shit of and who would you like to shit in the mouth of? Is with the combined shit of you and the shit of the person that you have in
I'm
front
not
of
joking.
You.
Yeah. That has just broken my dream. And it was, oh my God, this is so weird.
Yeah.
I had a dream last night that Sacha Baron Cohen was making me eat shit.
Wow. Someone's got above themselves thinking that.
I didn't mind because it was Sacha Baron Cohen. So him.
Sacha Baron, you'd eat Sacha, clearly.
Fucking
and then.
Hell. No, I can't. I don't make me answer the rest
of
that.
You don't have to answer. You don't have to answer anything.
I feel like I've already said too much.
Okay. I'll ask you this question.
I could never be in an interrogation situation. I'd tell them everything immediately.
Okay. How about we're going to have to stop? So I'm having a really nice time, but we're going to have to Have you ever seen anything truly unexpected in a bagging area?
That's so nice.
It's a hard one to answer.
There isn't. I can't top the question. That's the problem. There isn't.
All right, how about this? Is it just me, or is the aftertaste to a Pringles crisp just a little bit claggy? I don't
like
it.
No, Pringles aren't actually crisps.
Aren't they?
No, technically.
They're sort of just reconstituted.
They're not to crisp. They can't be called crisps anymore because they're just Pringles. Because it's not a crisp, because it's not got enough potato in it.
Right. I don't like them.
I don't mind them.
Did you see Jeremy Corbyn
eating the Pringles?
No, I didn't.
Because he'll just do anything, right? Because he's just a lad. Someone went, Jeremy, have some Pringles. He went, all right. Just ate them, and I was like, I'm definitely voting for you.
Yeah,
Pringle-eating legend.
I saw him failing to do a high five and touching someone's breast
that
instead.
Was the best moment of the entire election.
That's why I'm
that
voting
was
for him from
what
now.
It was all about.
Is that?
Yeah, he does a lot of failed high. He did another one, didn't he, out of the car as well. He turned it into a wave.
Well, he's extraordinary. It's been an extraordinary week, and I've been forced on Twitter to eat my words quite a lot about people who've been saving old tweets up. But, yeah, good. Well, look, we might have to stop quite soon. What have you got coming up apart from this human being? Have you worked on anything recently? I mean, the human being will stop work for a little while, is my guess.
Yeah.
But is there stuff in the pipeline work-wise?
Yeah. I'm trying. Well, there's your thing. I've shot a couple of pilots.
Yeah, don't book any time off with my thing.
I won't. I'm writing some other stuff. There's no more Drifters.
Is there not? I have to say, I really do think it's a fantastic series.
That's
me and my wife love
you.
It a lot, even before I met you. And now I've met you, I have to say it, but we religiously watched it.
Oh, thank you.
And we believe that your weed turns into wine. No, sorry. I was trying to make a joke about religiously, but it didn't work. Let's cut that out. So, made me look funny. But no, why then is there definitely not going to be more just because you've...
You know, the people at Channel 4 said... I mean, I probably shouldn't be... I don't know, should I talk about this? Who cares? they just said that they couldn't make a decision about it until 2019.
Right.
And I just think that I haven't got that amount of time to wait around.
Not with the old mole there.
No. Not with... You're going to feel so bad... That happens.
The doctor said, he rang me up and said, because I was joking around so much, I couldn't tell her at the time, can you just slip this in at the end of the podcast?
Oh my God. Well, thanks for that. No, this is actually a good way to get bad news during the recording of a podcast. Yeah, so you heard it here first.
I'm sorry to hear that there won't be any more.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I mean, I would like to do some more, but it's very turbulent at Channel 4 at the moment, apparently. So I'm working on some new stuff.
Great.
Got a new writing partner.
Okay.
And that's fun.
Great.
So I only have to do a bit of work now. and she's great. So we've got kind of a couple of things hopefully happening soon. And I'm just writing stuff and hoping it'll get made. You know what it's like.
I do.
And I haven't so there isn't really anything major. I think I might be filming David O'Doherty's pilot next week.
Oh, lovely. That's nice. Yeah, that sounds like fun. Jennifer Saunders is in that as well.
Yeah. But they're just trying to work out whether
that'll do.
That'll get in the way.
They can film around that. just have to stand behind the counter.
Yeah, no, just hold a folder or to stand behind some plants. Yeah. That's what I said, but yeah. So we'll, I don't know. We'll see. I wish I had more to tell you.
No, you did 4 series of Drifters, which is, you know, is like an amazing achievement.
Yeah.
Given how rubbish it is. I really love it. I think it's just because it's so filthy and funny and it's, you know.
Yeah.
I think, but it's the same thing again. It's like, you know, you don't see that very often with like three. There'll be like one woman in something and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
like
and it's about being a woman. Yeah. I mean, this was just supposed to be silliness, pure silliness. It was never going to change the world. And it didn't. It was really fun to do. I kind of feel very conflicted about Drifters. So I am very proud of it on the one hand. On the other hand, I'm very aware that it's not like a masterpiece and
I watch Adam Sandler films, so anything compared to that.
But you think, the cobbler.
But it's knockabout and it's bawdy, and but that's what I know. I think all those things are good. That's what comedy's about. It's about whether it's
anymore. I don't know. It just feels like comedy's getting less silly.
Sometimes, but there's still great. I mean, I really love Greg Davies's Man Down, which is a similar area, I think, as well. You know, it's just it's silly. But I think Drifters has got like a lot more to it. I think it's very good. I'm very disappointed to hear that you're not doing any more, and I'm going to kickstart you to do 6 more.
Maybe in 2019, if they make their mind up, and I will have a 2-year-old child, and I just can't see how I'm gonna be able to write about that period of my life anymore, because I'll be beyond it.
It hasn't stopped me. Hasn't stopped me just carrying on being the same as I was when I was 24. Anyway, look, we might have to call it a day there, but with that terrible, with the double whammy
really
of the
news.
Cancer and no more Drifters.
Oh, God, how are we going to bring them back? It doesn't matter.
It's all been fine. It's really lovely to talk to you, and I hope I will get to work with you again, because I think you're a fantastic comedian and actor. Ladies and gentlemen, Jessica Nabbitt!
Thanks very much.
You have been listening to Rich Stone's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Rich Herring, and my guest, Jessica Nabbitt. The music, as always, is by Pess. Lots of people to thank. Everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre, of course. Everyone at Go Fast the Stripe, of course. All the crew who record, especially George, who is an increasingly less incompetent sound man, but still quite incompetent. And Kinga and Vince, I'd like to thank this week as well. It is produced this week by Ash Caffrey, and it is a Sky Potato. GoFasterStripe.com and Fuzz Production, though. Ben's not here, so I don't know why I'm promoting his shitty company. Thanks for listening. Bye. Thanks for listening. We are very professional here, as you can tell. If you want to find out about future gigs and future Rehelastapers and Rehefp and Ofrigam 50, go to richtang.com/gigs and you can see all the upcoming gigs there. Or go to leicestersquaretheatre.com and you can buy tickets to the Leicester Square Theatre gigs, which are on Mondays throughout July. Thanks for listening. Go away. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks again for listening to the podcast. RichardHerring.com/ballback/tour or RichardHerring.com/gigs for all of the information on the tour. GoFasterStripe.com for lots of downloads and books and lots of fun. Thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends about the tour. I love you all. I'm out.